Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
It happens every 2 hours and 9 minutes, all day, every day. That's the frequency of federal regulations. I still don't have your attention? Well, listen to this. These regulations cost us $1.8 trillion a year. Now, we're going to examine federal regulations, why they're so expensive, and what can be done about it. My guest is Wayne Cruz. He's the Vice President for Policy and the Director of Technology Studies at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Wayne, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you for letting me visit with you. I appreciate it.
Now, I was kind of appalled, astonished, and yet not surprised, I guess I should say. I knew there were a lot of federal regulations.
Right.
I did not realize the sheer number. And I didn't realize how many were being passed every single year. Put it in perspective for us.
We can do that. You mentioned the cost of regulations of $1.8 trillion. You know, the federal government spends every year now about $3.5 trillion, close to $4. So now the regulatory cost, the hidden tax of the federal government, is over half the size of government itself. Now, you know what regulations are. It's all of the edicts from the EPA, from the Consumer Product Safety Commission, from the Federal Communications Commission, the OSHA, all of that alphabet soup of agencies put out about over 3,500 regulations every single year. And that's cumulative because we don't really go back and roll these things back. Got concerned about this a long time ago. I was working at CEI, and I'd just come from working on the Hill. And all the groups in town were focused on the size of the federal budget and the deficit. But I was looking at all of the outpouring from these regulatory agencies, just thousands of rules a year, and realized we don't really have a good handle on their impacts. We talk about the deficit, we talk about federal spending, but there's that whole other component of what the federal government does or requires us to do.
Now, when we talk about the cost, we're talking about the cost to businesses and
cost
to individuals to enforce these, put these regulations into place.
To comply. If you're
to
a small, if you're, you know, imagine if you're, you know, you run a carpet store or a small factory. You know, certain regulations and rules will apply when you have one employee, then it changes when you have five, then you get 10, 15. And now with Obamacare, everything's going to stop at 49.
But, yes, I'm afraid so.
That's where all the business will be, but where it all will be. You know, part of the federal budget obviously goes just to running the agencies. But what I'm talking about here is sort of the off-budget cost of government, the hidden tax. These are the compliance costs that the private sector faces, and some lower-level governments. You know, back in the 90s, when we did have a little bit of regulatory reform, the governors were up in arms over federal mandates, primarily a lot of EPA rules, you know, over stormwater regulations and things like that. And the governors swarmed to town to get those rules rolled back. But we're primarily talking about the compliance costs. We got unfunded mandates reform, but it's not very strong. There are new efforts to deal with that and to put the brakes on, as we'll talk about a little bit, to put the brakes on rules and come up with ways of unwinding what the damage some of them do when they go too far.
All right. Now, clarify us before we go farther. What is the difference between a funded mandate and an unfunded mandate? I think I know, but I'm not sure.
An unfunded mandate is simply a regulation you have to comply with, but the government's not helping you pay for it. Most everything is unfunded. That's just the term used with respect, particularly to what impacts lower level governments when they have to deal with Washington.
And state governments, of course, have to comply with all of these.
That's
and they're not
right.
getting money from the feds, and they see it sapping up their budget.
Oh, that's right.
Well, what could we do with this $1.8 trillion if we didn't have to spend it on regulation? Now, I'm not anti-regulation.
Imagine.
We have
sure.
to have regulation.
Sure.
We have to have safety. We have to have a lot of things. But these just keep going on. It's like they go on and they add on every year. Am I right?
Actually, that's right. And it's a good distinction to make. When you talk about safety regulations or rules that are meant to benefit consumers, with privacy regulations, meat inspection regulations and things like that. Those are different from economic regulations, say government regulating cybersecurity, which can have downs as well as ups, government regulation of privacy or government antitrust intervention, like today with the judge ruling against Apple on the ebook issue. You know, economic regulation is different from health and safety, and I think part of the when we talk about solutions to this, part of it is a distinguishing between the two. But it matters a lot. A lot of the health and safety rules are now coming out of EPA, FDA, and so forth. economic rules like FCC, net neutrality regulations, and things of that sort. So it's a huge amount. And what we try to do with the report, with reports like CEI and other groups put out, is to put our arms around it and grapple with it and come up with ways with coping with it.
Okay. All right. So it's affecting us and everything mm-hmm. that we do, from the car I drive to the milk I drink and, mm-hmm. and whatever else I do, there are regulations controlling it. Some of those regulations are probably so old that they're totally outdated. And you made the point in an article that you read that I read recently that some of them, for example, in technology, they may go on forever, but the technology changes so fast the regs are outdated mm-hmm. in 2 years.
I think that's a lot of what you see, for example, with current efforts by the FCC to regulate net neutrality and to regulate internet networks. It's long been the case that your choice in using a phone was having a black or a tan one, and we're no longer in that old FCC world that was ruled by scarcity of the airwaves and public access on airwaves. Now with the internet and broadband and mobile phones, everybody's a broadcaster now, and that old world has changed. And so, but yet FCC is still trying to expand its turf into new areas, regulating mobile broadband and so forth.
And a lot of these things have been doing just fine without regulation.
Oh, of course.
They are regulations. There are a lot of regulations, but it's
right.
They're not specific things directed from the FCC, for example.
That's right. And you can undermine the growth of consumer benefits and the growth of all this broadband wealth and internet wealth that's coming our way by clamping down on it too hard with premature regulation. It's just not a good idea to do that. And remember, too, I think it's important to point out that when you're talking about consumer safety or consumer welfare, your choice is never not regulation. Your real choice is government discipline. You know, are the bureaucrats going to do the best job, or competitive discipline? And now I'm a libertarian type, a free market type. I like to say that where we possibly can, look for ways to make sure that market discipline and market pressures serve to regulate companies and prevent them from doing bad things. And this is for issues like, you know, whether it's food labeling or internet privacy or energy efficiency and so forth. Because remember, companies don't operate in a vacuum. They've got their upstream business suppliers that they have to please. If they tick them off, they'll go to another customer. Downstream business customers, Wall Street, consumers, regulators, there are all these entities that are arrayed against companies if they misbehave. If we replace that market discipline with what we call regulation coming out of the federal government, we can make consumers worse off. So you always have to watch and keep in mind.
It can increase price. It can also increase the scope of products that we may get.
Actually, you touch on an important point. If regulations can increase prices of goods, that points to a potential misuse of them. It's this phenomenon of so-called mm-hmm. of rent seeking. Mm-hmm. Some big companies love regulation because they can meet the mandates. They've got the lawyers to deal with it, and they've mm-hmm. got the wherewithal to deal with it. And it will shut out where it shuts their smaller competitors out. So,
yeah,
so that's the other point that you have to watch out with respect to regulation. And it's not just economic regulation. It's not just abuse of antitrust regulation to shut out a better rival with lower
right.
cost, but it's, you know, environmental rules can be that way. You can see a lot of companies saying, yes, let's support these new energy efficiency standards. But in their head, they know, well, you know, I can do this. But my competitors can't. It's going to raise
price. Let's take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Wayne Cruz. He's Vice President for Policy and Director of Technology Studies at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And we're talking about the $1.8 trillion a year that government regulation costs us. Now, we're not advocating getting rid of all regulation, but we just need to go back and do some examinations. Now, you said that mm-hmm. the last 20 years, the number of regulations have just been growing by leaps and bounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I read somewhere that one agency is all set to come out with 4,000 new regulations this year. What was that?
I'm not sure exactly which one that is, but I can tell you this, that the EPA has teed up a flood of new regulations dealing with energy efficiency, with the so-called CAFE standards, corporate average fuel economy standards, with respect to regulation of emissions from cars.
I know what it was. It was your article. You said that there was a little more than 4,000 regulations are in various stages of the rulemaking
process.
That's
right. You know, earlier we mentioned that every year there are about 3,500 rules that get finalized from, we're talking now, 63 departments, agencies, and commissions in the federal government issuing these rules. Right now, at this very moment, exactly, not one agency, but across the agency.
But across the board, yes, I misspoke.
There are 4,062 rules at the proposed, final, just completed at these stages. And in fact, the government's new report, haven't had a chance to go and look at it yet. That's one of my projects this week. But the new so-called unified agenda of federal regulations has just come out. And you might recall on these numbers of rules coming out every year, you might remember at the State of the Union address, President Obama, the year before this past one, he said, you know, we're gonna deal with regulation. We need to do look backs and deal with regulations. He said, we're gonna get rid of a regulation. You know, there's a crazy regulation that treats spilled milk as an oil. Well, we're gonna get rid of that regulation. Okay, great. But what he proposed and what the Office of Management and Budget proposed were getting rid of about $5 billion of regulations. That's all. And they made a big deal out of this too, but that's a trivial amount
when you're talking about approaching
$2 trillion
in
regulatory costs.
Actually, that cost as I learned from you is larger than Canada's entire economy.
Well, you did ask what we could do with that money.
We could do a lot, couldn't we?
Well, imagine if companies were. You brought up the point of you're not talking about not regulating. You're talking about the best kinds of institutions and disciplines that protect consumers. Remember, if you advocate free markets, you're not saying everybody runs wild. What you're saying that when you create a new product or a new service, all new products and services have risks associated with them. And we're going to see that in the future with biotechnology, with robotics, with nanotechnology. In free markets, when you create a new product or service, markets also create the institutions that cope with that risk. And that can be insurance standards, new liability standards. It could be the kinds of things that your organization does with respect to brokering disputes and things like that, new
Yes.
professional ethics. There are all of these standards in institutions that arise alongside the creation of the particular kind of wealth.
So that keeps everything in line.
And
it
also
keeps people, businesses from going wild.
Right.
And consumers from having to pay a tremendous price
indeed.
For new products and developments.
Indeed. So we have ways of dealing with risk and dealing with misbehavior that aren't always thinking that, well, you know, the bureaucrat over in the office, they know what to do, or the EPA is the one that knows what to do. And I think part of that applies to the question that eventually the U.S. is going to face, and what do we do with all this regulation? We can ignore it for a time, but we can't forever because our overseas competitors, you know, everything is globalized now. It's easy to outsource labor. It's easy to outsource jobs and manufacturing. So we're going to want to have good standards here in the U.S. where it's very attractive for companies to create jobs here.
Well, we've seen the rush of people to move their work abroad. I mean, because of price, costs of running a business here.
That's right. Well, and we hear, you know, in our line of work, you know, we run into entrepreneurs, we meet business people all the time. Business people don't want to be in this crouching defensive position all the time. They want to create products, create wealth, create jobs, and they don't want to be treated as, you know, always out trying to do bad. But I think part of recognizing that I always like to take the optimistic standpoint, even though I call this report 10,000 Commandments. I've got another one called Tip of the Costberg, talking about all of these huge costs. But I take an optimistic stance in this sense. If we look at the world right, most of the world's jobs haven't been created yet. Most of our wealth hasn't been created yet. I always say, you know, it's only 2013, and we don't have to do the bad regulatory policies in the future with respect to new industries that come about, whether it's mm-hmm. internet, nanotechnology, robotics, whether it's Richard Branson's low Earth orbit in space. No matter what it is, we don't. If we've made mistakes in the past, we don't have to continue doing them. So it's like that. You don't have to tell the grass to grow. You just have to take the rocks off of it.
Okay, now let's talk about taking some of the rocks off.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get rid of some of these regulations? Now, mm-hmm. are businesses likely to be faced with conflicting regs, one that was passed a few years ago and then another one that comes down the pike? Which one do they obey? Because
yeah.
they're both in place.
Well, as it is, there's so many, you can always
just
be caught.
Them.
You can always be caught in violation of something. But I think where I was noticing, I was just looking at some things today. about, you know, recently we've had this controversy with respect to Obamacare and the implementation schedule for that. And I was looking at, you know, some of the rules are DHS. Then I realized, oh, yeah, the exchanges. Oh, those have got to be regulated by the Office of Personnel Management. And so all of these rules and regulations are, especially when you're talking about something as gargantuan as the entire national healthcare system, the rules are coming from all over the place. Still, people cannot make heads or tails of it. And I fear it's going to stay that way. But it's a similar situation with respect to the Dodd-Frank financial regulation, for example.
Yeah, we're still feeling the impact of that. And that's going on for a while, right?
That's right.
And it has not turned out to be so really great for consumers as many people had touted it to be.
Right. You could do a whole extra show on the whole dispute over did we really go after the real target, because a lot of people bring up the point of government moral hazard and, you know, letting the government-sponsored entities who basically got away with murder on this and continue to exist rather than having been abolished. Well, be that as it may, you have Securities and Exchange regulations, Commodity Futures Trading Commission regulations, Treasury Department regulations, all of these entities that are putting out rules, stamping out rules like chocolate bunnies. It's just so many coming out from these agencies. And we still, it's like the EPA rules that have been, you know, been delayed and held up, which is a good thing. But they can't meet the timelines on these rules because there are just so many of them. And we've created these new concepts of regulation that I think are very ominous for the future, like the too big to fail notion with respect
That's
to government
scary.
Oversight. Because you imagine if it, in a proper market, you know, financial institutions get disciplined, you know, as we were talking about before. When governments run in control of the money supply, interest rates, and all that, you have a different situation. But it's difficult to advance when now, well, what if other entities get involved in the financial sector? They get deemed as too big to fail. Is this going to happen with insurance companies? Is this going to happen with Walmart?
Who's
next when you take on that
when you
that
start
approach?
Making exceptions to the mm-hmm. rules? Let's just take a pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. My guest is Wayne Cruz. He's with the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and we're talking about the high cost of federal regulations. Now, let's just talk a little bit about these regulations. Some of them have been on the books forever. They, mm-hmm. they're in conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know how businesses begin to keep up with what's going on. Even small businesses are affected by
right.
many of these regulations. How do they do that, and how can we get rid of them? Now, you had proposed a commission mm-hmm. that would examine these rules, I assume a bipartisan, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. has nothing to do with politics.
Right. They wouldn't be serving members of Congress. Here's a couple of things. First, we have the existing body of regulations that we presume cost around $1.8 trillion. And you have that existing body of rules. So I think the way you cope with that is – we call it a regulatory reduction commission. I used to work in the Senate, and the that idea was proposed. And it's a lot like the military base closure commission, where you assemble, because nobody can agree. So you assemble a package where everyone has to vote. It's an up or down vote. No amendments allowed. And you try to root out regulations. I think that idea, kind of like the earlier unfunded mandates mm-hmm. when governors, you know, were fed up and stormed into Washington. I think there is a recognition that regulations go too far. I mean,
so
we've seen
consumers are waking up to this fact,
right? But also the legislators and so forth, who normally you don't imagine them getting excited about doing something about regulatory reform, because we see it in Obama's new budget. There's a chapter there dedicated to regulation and rationalizing the regulatory process. So imagine if we started now and then, for as long as we needed to do it, there were an annual package put together of regulations. You know what? We can get rid of these ones. We can get rid of these FCC rules, or we can get rid of these Federal Energy Regulatory Commission rules and so forth, and roll them back and do that as long as you need to do it. But then what you really have to watch for is, we were talking a little bit about before, is for all of the new rules that are coming out every year. So with the existing body of rules, you can do a regulatory reduction commission. You can do sunsetting, you know, when they come up mm-hmm. for reauthorization.
I think you'd propose in one paper that after 5 years mm-hmm. that they be either renewed or gotten rid of. Just let them expire.
Yeah, I'd heard it put one time, you know, every regulation should have an expiration date like a carton of milk.
I like that.
And then you have to. So you have that existing body that I think a commission makes sense and expiration dates make sense. And in fact, the Progressive Policy Institute this year had put out a late last year had put out a paper. They used a different name, but it was essentially the same notion as the Regulatory Reduction Commission. So there's some bipartisan effort to that. As for future rules, I think, first of all, we stand back and look at the 3,000 or so that are coming down each year. Right now, all OMB looks at and costs out are the ones that are so-called economically significant, meaning they cost over $100 million a year.
So they don't even look at the little things.
They don't look at the little things. But and I always joke, well, you know what that means? All of the other ones cost $99 million, and they don't look at it. But, you know, so we have a very, very – it's a very inadequate grasp of the scope of regulatory costs. But in any event, Congress should look at those major rules, and there's something – to this effect that's been proposed and passed in the last Congress in the House, not in the Senate, that was called the RAINS Act, which stands for Regulation from the Executive in Need of Scrutiny. Basically what it would do, of those 3,000 rules, imagine there's 100 or so that are deemed by the agency, and you have to take their word for it, deemed by the agencies as economically significant. Those rules would go back to Congress for an up or down expedited vote, no amendments allowed. And you could do it in bulk. You do like executive calendar nominations and just read it as part of morning. But the idea is to eliminate this problem we have now of regulation without representation, because so many there's a huge disconnect between all of these departments and agencies putting out regulations, which are law, but they're not subject to recall by voters. They're not, you know, we vote, you know, Congress says all the Constitution says all legislative power shall reside with the Congress of the United States. But in fact, the agencies are issuing the bulk of rules. Last year, I think the Congress passed 124 laws that Obama signed, but regulations were 3,807. So I call
and
it the
regulations are call passed. They don't have to be signed by the president.
That's right.
They just simply are something the agencies can set up. That's going to control the way you
that's right.
breathe,
they,
sleep,
they issue, they
how much
issue
water
four.
You can use in the shower, how much water you can use in the toilet.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's astonishing. What can we as consumers do?
I think the good thing that consumers can do is just pay attention to the debates, because consumers are paying attention to issues like the deficit and the debt.
Well you can say you and, can stop right there. Consumers are paying.
Yeah, they're paying. They don't they're not right. just paying attention, they're paying. That's exactly right. And I think especially consumers who are also small business people or
yes.
work for small business,
yes.
I mean, they see the impact of regulation and see what it does. And there are really good reform ideas that are in play. And I think people are starting to realize, you know what? Wow, the regulatory burden is so big now. It's the size of what the entire federal budget was a decade and a half ago. So even if we were to balance the federal fiscal budget right now, we'd still be subject to all these rules and we still couldn't grow. So I think people are starting to wake up to that notion of take the rocks off the grass and let
well,
things
Well, it seems to me like we
forth.
Could reduce the cost of products, the cost of services,
and
we
imagine
improve
how,
our budget standards.
And imagine what a boon for the economy.
And what a boon for inventors or people with new ideas and wanting to start businesses.
Indeed. That's
because
right.
you don't have to, you know, I can't imagine if I were starting a small business how I would even figure out how to cope with all the regulations.
You know, there was
how
an
many
inter-
forms do I have to file? My son runs a small business. He has to file a lot of forms.
That's right. That's right. It's a lot of paperwork. In fact, there was a great report put out by a group called the American Action Forum on the cost of paper government paperwork. Now, some of that gets counted in the cost of regulation, but I went looking at it and I realized a lot of it doesn't. We have no idea. Just the compliance cost of the tax code itself, you know, that's a cost of government too. That's around $300 billion. Imagine if we had a simplified tax system, simplified regulation, and much more rational regulation that we always knew had certainty about. Like, think about all the uncertainty associated with Dodd-Frank, all the uncertainty associated with Obamacare, and we could. We should be replicating and expanding the GDP, not
right.
regulations.
The last word. Thank you, Wayne. It's been really fascinating. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here in Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest has been Wayne Cruz. He's Vice President for Policy and the Director of Technology Studies at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And thank you so much. I'm Shirley Rooker, and we thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.